If you are fearful, a horse will back off. If you are calm and confident, it will come forward. For those who are often flattered or feared, the horse can be a welcome mirror of the best in human nature. Claire Balding. Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I'm meeting a new friend. Her name is Selena Shands, and she's the CEO of Full Capacity Marketing. She has virtual businesses and has been a mentor and an educator coming up from a background in sports, basketball. Is that right?
That's it, yes.
Amazing and varied background. And where are you talking to me from?
Well, today I'm from home base, which is San Diego, California. But okay. My accent, people will hear an accent, and that's from North Carolina.
I was going to say.
I can't get rid of it. I've been here like 35 years, and people every day will say, oh, did you just move here? That's lovely. I'm like, no, I've been here for 35 years.
Well, you know, one of the things that I've done as a theater artist and director and educator is I've helped people neutralize their regionalisms. They have, you know, and some of them have been professional, not involved in the arts, not involved in theater, mm-hmm. but they are public speakers like yourself or you know, dealing right. with a variety and just wanting to just wanting to have a broader reach. And there still is, why is it that there's still such a stigma on coming from a particular part of the country or having a particular accent or regionalism? What do you think about
that? I don't really mind it, honestly. I just find it as a conversation starter, and it's okay if people make fun of my accent, because once they get to know me and, you know, our level of expertise, it's all good. So I don't really, you don't really think about it much. And the thing is, I talk to my family every day on the phone. So it's like I've never left. And I'm okay with that. Or if I'm at a happy hour and I have a glass of wine, then you will not be able to understand me. Fortunately, I'm just having tea this morning, so she will get through this okay.
Well, I think it's beautiful. And I we were talking a little bit earlier, I grew up all over the world, and I have, mm-hmm. you know, I have no regionalism. I don't have, people can't tell right. by the way I talk where I come from. They know I'm American. But right. they're also, you know, depending on if I'm out and with a group of people, it's hard to pinpoint. But we are so much more than where we're from.
Yes.
And I'm excited to hear more about your biography, because I think it's fascinating. And I want to know how you got to where you are from where you came. Because it was a tough upbringing, wasn't it?
It was, you know, not unusual. Growing up in the South, I grew up in a family that had a lot of alcoholism. And so my childhood was really tumultuous. And it's very common, I think, you know, people grow up in that environment, but people react to it in different ways. Like I look at my siblings, right? And one got into drugs, and, you know, another one was a motivator and a self-starter. And she was the one that really influenced me, telling me, I call her still to this day, she's Sissy Shiro in my contacts, because she really raised me and told me, you know, if you can dream it, you need to be it, right? And she didn't just say those words, but like she started her own company. And what was interesting is, you know, I had this athletic prowess, and she noticed that. And so she said, you know what, I'm going to go get a worker's permit. She got a worker's permit at 15 years old. Wow. And she basically bought me all the necessities, food, you know, everything. She learned to sew and sewed sundresses for me, right? And which was really fun, she kept trying to make me more of a girly girl, and I was a total tomboy. Yeah. Like I would wear these sundresses with wallabies. I don't know if you know what a wallaby is.
I don't.
Okay, it's crazy. It's like this half booty suede kind of moccasin. And I just thought they were so cool. And I would wear them with these sundresses because I was always a tomboy out there playing football or basketball and everything. Well, she got me into this very small private school through her guidance because she said education is the way out.
Right.
And that way I could channel all that negativity and angst from home into sports, right? And I was out of the house. It was just fantastic. I met my best friend there. I lived with her for a while, cropping tobacco in the summers and then playing sports in the afternoon. But fortunately, all that allowed me to get a basketball scholarship to go to college, and that was my way out.
That's that you're right. It's a common story. And I think
Yeah.
when you grow up in a period of time, I mean, I'm 57 and I remember the cocktail hour. I remember
Right.
that,
Right.
you know, my parents would come home, they were both working, and they would come
Right.
home and they didn't want to see the kids. They wanted to sit down, have a nice stiff drink, let their day go, and you would have supper together, but you really wouldn't hang out. The kids were out of the house. We were out on the streets playing with
Right.
our friends, and you know, but there was that residual behavior and psychology around the consumption of alcohol or whatever it happens to be. And they don't even have to be drinking to exhibit those
Yes,
challenging
exactly.
behaviors. Yeah.
Yeah, and then in my family too, we have mental disease layered on top of that. So if you give a bipolar, a drink, and they drink, and back then there wasn't,
We
you
didn't
went to a
know.
psychiatrist. We didn't talk about it, right? Well, it was very sort of a violent environment. But I tell you, the gift out of that, which I loved and thankful for to this day, is that it really honed my intuition, my gut. Everybody says, "Oh, I'm listening to my gut," right? Because in that environment, you sort of walk on around eggshells. It's kind of like a domestic violence incident where, there's a violent incident and then everything is fine and calm. And then that tension builds and you can literally feel it. Well, that was my survival mechanism. But now what it does is I make my, don't get me wrong, I use data to make all my business decisions. But at the end of the day, I go into my gut and say, it doesn't feel right. So I'm not going to do it. And
I'm
I've
exactly
learned to,
the
and what a gift to have that, right? And it's
same.
kept
It
me
is.
on the right path, right?
And I was like you in a way, I was rescued from that environment. I had an
Okay.
opportunity to leave home at 13. And this is a story I tell a lot because it was one of those pivotal moments in my development at age 14. The woman of the family who I was staying with, this was in Brazil. So I wasn't close to family. I didn't have an out. I didn't have an escape hatch. So her daughter was a classmate of mine and had seen that I would come to school injured or bruised
Oh,
or depressed or
okay.
whatever. And she reported to her mom that
Oh.
this was, you know, something was wrong with Henry and what can we do? And so they weren't close with my parents. She was an American psychologist who married the right-hand man to the president of Brazil at that time.
Okay.
And so she had a background to be able to hold whatever I was going through and called a meeting with my parents and said, we'd like Henry to come and stay with us until you figure your stuff out. And however long that takes.
Wow.
And kind of gave them an ultimatum. And so I went and stayed with them. And on my 14th birthday, Judy called me into the kitchen and she said, happy birthday, put your hand out. And to me, put your hand out meant it was going to get slapped or cut or burned,
Spanking. Yeah.
you know? And so I put my hands behind my back and she said, do you trust me? I said, yes, I do. And she said, then put your hand out. It's okay. I won't hurt you. And I very gingerly put my hand out. And in the palm of my hand, she placed a tiny little folded up pieces of paper, like a fortune cookie slip, you know. And I said, what's this? And she said, it's your birthday present. You can open it. And I unfolded the little piece of paper, and it was the word integrity. And she said, do you know what it means? I was just 14 that day. I didn't know. So she said, go look it up. Now, we didn't have Google, Hit a big brass music stand in the corner of her living room with the Oxford English Dictionary open at all times. So you go and you thumb through and you find the word. And for me, what it did, that moment turned me completely on a different path, because it gave me permission to own, to recognize and own who I am as a whole person, that every aspect of who I was integral to the whole of me. And, you know, it gave me ownership over myself. And I could have gone down a very dark road of self-destruction or destruction of others. And I didn't, because of that moment. And to this day, I give that same little slip of paper to a lot of 14-year-olds that I mentor.
Wow, that is such an amazing story. And I would call her one of your pivotal people. And I have had many, I've always felt like the universe had my back. Like when, you know, you get thrown in that environment, there are angels that look after you. There are people that look after you. Like my sister was one of my pivotal people. And then along the path, and they really mold you into who you are, and shows the power of mentorship, that we have something to give every single person on this universe, within the universe. Like, what is it, you know? And it sounds like you're doing that.
A guy wire is a tensioned cable that is designed to enhance the stability of a freestanding structure. Think of me as your guy wire. In terms of life skills mentoring, you're perfectly capable of standing stably on your own two feet. But I'm a cable that can enhance your stability. I'm available for individual or couples counseling, life skills mentorship, child loss grief support, LGBTQ plus support. I can also officiate weddings, end of life ceremonies, baby namings, invocations, or whatever guidance you may need. I serve all genders, all ages. Sessions are affordable, discreet, private, and conducted online. Find me at guy-wire.org. Book your appointment today. Very much. I experience it like a frequency. I'm finding other people who are operating at that same frequency.
Yes.
And we're having this conversation on a global scale. Doesn't matter where you're from or your background, your socioeconomic status, geography. There's a truth, a universal truth that we are finding that got me into life skills education and mentorship work. It's a conversation we don't have enough. And that's why in the midst of COVID, I started this podcast, because I knew that I could reach out to experts around the world in one skill or another. It's not a question of whether we're learning these skills, it's how well are we learning these skills, and from whom, and how proficient were they? And parents are usually the go-to expectation of teaching those essential life skills to their children. But most parents fall way short of being able to do that effectively. Schools fall way short in doing that effectively. And when I interview a lot of young people today, and I ask them the question, where did you learn your life skills? And when I say life skills, I'm talking about communication skills, financial literacy, emotional literacy, sexual literacy, grief, hygiene, and nutrition. Every one of us on the planet, 8 billion now, are learning the same skills in one measure or another, but more proficiency than others, right? So I ask them, where do you learn your life skills? And they usually do not say from my parents. Mm-mm. They usually do not say from school, even, or their peers. Some say their peers. Most now are turning to TikTok, YouTube, the internet, now AI, which I want to talk to you about a little bit too, your perspective on your journey with technology in our time, and how that can augment that entrepreneurial spirit that exists right. in all of us and really should be augmented. Where did you learn your life skills? I mean, you did say that your sister was a huge influence, but growing up, mm-hmm. were there other sources that you would turn to find your way?
Oh, absolutely. And I think my, you know, there are many motivators, right? And I look at my career. I've had my company now. This is my third company. I've had the company for 21 years. I started another company in my late 20s and then sold my second company. And I've had this one, you know, for a long time. And, you know, you don't just get here by yourself, no. nor do you get here overnight. Nor is it a straight path, like, oh, I'm going to get my degree and then I'm going to do this. A lot of that stuff society kind of puts on us. And part of it is just really getting in touch, I think, with who you are and what you can lean into or that are your strengths, right? So I've had many, many motivators, but I think one of my big ones was sports. Even in that time era, and I played basketball before the 3-point shot, so I'm kind of aging myself here.
Wow.
But I played everything in school. And my motivator there was to be out of the house and channel, because I had all this energy. You know, I couldn't sit still. It was right. anxiety. It was just angst. And so my teammates, like learning how to play team sports. And my best friend was also, and her family was a mentor. So that little private school I went to, people came from all over. And so I lived a lot in the country with my best friend and her family. And I got to see the family unit, like how it was supposed to be, right? So those types of things. Just mentors I've met, my colleagues across the nation in my field, you know, working with them. And just having pivotal moments in my life where it's like, okay, this was really, you know, I think back and I think, wow, there's like probably two or three that were just huge that allowed me to get unstuck. And part of, I think, whether you're looking at your personal goals or your professional goals, it's how do you keep yourself stuck? And for many years, I looked at myself as a victim mode. You know, from growing up in that environment and all that kind of stuff. And it really held me back. It wasn't until I started appreciating the gifts that came out of that, you know, how I grew up, that made me very grateful. And to this day, growing the business into this multi-million dollar, you know, company, I walk around my home and I go, wow, this is my house. Like every day I get up in the morning and go, wow.
Pinch myself. Really, yeah, exactly.
You know, or I'll walk in my backyard and sit by the fountain and go, this is my fountain. And the biggest aha moment, I still have this in the grocery store, is when I had to go on public assistance for a while and all that. But finally, when I got out of all that, I had these little envelopes with cash in it, and I could only spend a certain amount of cash at the store. Yep. And I swear this was like 3 weeks ago, I was in the grocery store and I'm going and I said, I can buy this whole aisle, or I, you know, and it was just like, okay, this is cool. So I think that keeps me humble. It's like never forgetting where I came from and appreciating the gifts from it. There are a lot of, you know, twists and turns to get there, to get to that gratitude place.
Absolutely. Gratitude is key. And also you hit the nail on the head as far as that attitude of victimhood.
Yes.
I run into that a lot with marginalized groups. I run into that a lot with youth in general. Not as much a privileged group of youth, but even there you find it.
Yeah.
Sort of a whiny sort of entitlement. And I really strive to navigate that with them in a way that is simple, because we are dumbing down our kids. You've got to meet them where they are. You can't expect them to rise up to the level that you've achieved. You have to meet them where they are. And you and I have been there where they are. We've felt those things, right? And we've overcome them and we've found our way with, as you say, a lot of help and a lot of angels walking the earth, right?
Absolutely.
One of the things that I approach them with is the question, what is the opposite of victim?
Great what question.
And most of them can't answer it. Most adults I know can't answer it.
Yes.
And And the answer is simple. It's Victor.
Yes.
If you are standing or sitting in a wheelchair and you're breathing oxygen, or, you know, you've made it into this moment, you're victorious. You've survived 100% of all the crap that life has thrown at you up until now.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting in a place of gratitude and recognition that you are victorious already.
Right.
Now what?
Mm-hmm.
All that's right. Floodgates are open of possibility.
It's interesting that you say we have to meet them where they are. And I also think we have to set the bar high, because when you think about it, like, nobody had expectations of me. If my sister had not come in and set the bar for me, I would just be kind of lost, I think.
Did she do that actively, or did she do that by the way that she navigated the world that you were a witness to?
She, a little bit of both, because, you know, you got to remember she's growing up in this environment with me. Right. So she has her own trauma to deal with and, you know, everything else. So, but what she did naturally is constantly tell me that I could be anything and, you know, and kind of set the bar. And then she demonstrated that. So I literally had a role model that showed me, oh, you know, so that role modeling is really important. And the reason I say set the bar high, you know, what we do, and I want to share a quick story with you. What we do in our company, you know, if you think about what we do, we're a traditional marketing consultancy, but we have a very specialized niche in that we help publicly funded workforce and education programs here in the States, and entrepreneurs, and who their customers are underrepresented and, you know, underserved populations that need training. You know, not everybody is fit, you know, ready for a four-year degree or can afford college or want to go to college, or there's so many different ways to that path, right? Yeah. And we were working with one organization in Dayton, Ohio, and it was, I think it was a charter school. And the woman that ran the school had all these, everybody had given up on these kids from high schools. They were dropouts. They were, you know, into drugs. They were, you know, some of them were justice involved, all the gamut. Well, when you go to her school, you learn a skill. And she had literally written herself in a line item budget with the city there that said, my kids are going to renovate downtown and learn construction skills. And then she got this machine and they were learning advanced manufacturing and all of that. They had employers lined up out the door waiting to hire these kids because they had these skill sets, right? So I'm very big on skill sets and how can that get you from point A to point B. Her theory was their bar wasn't even, they didn't even know what a bar was. And she had a zero tolerance policy and she laid all the rules out and she said, one time you're out. And she stuck to it and everybody saw that. So that's how she mentored. She had very, very high expectations. Now, what she did to get them to that place, you know, that's probably more in your skill set of mentoring and all of that. But I just thought that was very interesting that, you know, she set the bar extremely high for these kids where everybody, you know, just like they gave up on.
Well, so, yeah, it sounds like it was a school of last resorts in a way. And
it was
a number of those. Many of them are charter schools. I used to be involved in Waldorf education. That really, they actually, this was at the high school level, and they asked me to develop a life skills curriculum. And so I was doing those kinds of things, looking for opportunities, but also with a clear message that people are going to have expectations of you.
You're
going to need to rise up to, but you've got to have those expectations of yourself first and conquer that, right? Yes. Find integrity enough to figure out where your capacity for discipline, self-discipline lies. Because if you are trying to fit into a box that someone else is telling you you need to fit into, it's natural that adolescents are going to rebel against that.
Absolutely.
Yes. They want to break every box that's being built and say, you don't know me, you don't know who I am. Well, honey, you don't know you either.
Yeah, exactly. Or those people that say, you can't do that, or that can't be done. I always say, well, why not? You know, the universe is, you know, it gives you everything you need and then some. We're prisoners of our own mind and our own limitations. So, yeah.
balance, pain mitigation, range of motion, athletic performance, focus, memory, immune system support, and REM level of sleep, all this and more made possible affordably with no pharmaceuticals, no injections, or invasive treatments. Just socks, insoles, and patches made stronger with the tactile patterning of Vox Life products. Scientifically proven to work and guaranteed. Now in the USA, Canada, and the UK. Visit www.dianedinkmeyer.voxlife.com. That's Vox, V-O-X-X, Life. You'll be glad you did. And role modeling is key as well for those that are working with young people. When I talk about the parenting generation in terms of life skills and the expectations on parents to teach those life skills, you don't necessarily have to have kids to be in the parenting generation.
Absolutely.
When you're capable of having children physically and emotionally, culturally, and in some cultures it's young, it's 13. Mm-hmm. Then they're going to be eyes upon you, young eyes upon you. And when you are told and shown that because you are now, you've crossed the threshold into adulthood, young adulthood, where people who are younger than you are going to be looking to you for how to be in the world, it matters the way you enter a room. It matters the words that you choose to use to convey a message. It matters the way you present yourself. The way you present yourself is the way the world perceives you.
Mm-hmm. Right? Absolutely. And, so well said.
We know that because we've been down that road. I've got listeners in 41 countries around the world.
Wow.
And
fantastic.
I pinch myself every day when I see the numbers, and there is a universality to the human experience that we need to come back to and recognize that, yes, we are all different. Yes, we have different backgrounds. We have different cultures and different perspectives on the world. But when it comes down to those fundamental life skills that we are all learning, whether we know it or not, that's where the healing begins. That's where the growth begins. And that's where the possibilities begin. My grandmother used to say, honey, potential means nothing unless you're doing something with it. She was one of my pivotal people.
Right. She was one of your pivotal people. Exactly. And the thing is, you know, there are so many publicly funded resources that can help people get there. One of my clients is an adult education school, and adult ed school is really, it's free or low cost, and it helps immigrants learn English. Mm-hmm. It helps with adult basic education and even like stackable credentials for career education, learning a skill, an office skill, or welding, or whatever that is. And anyway, there's a story, and they shared where a homeless woman was living in a storage unit. She obtained her high school equivalency. They helped her get a laptop and finish and all of that. She followed up with different skill sets and got some credentials. Today, she's earning over $60,000 a year. Maybe. And she had a different pathway. So I pull for the people who want to do it in a different way. And yes, is college important? It can be. Degrees can be. I actually went that path. It's a really weird thing, but I have an undergraduate in business and marketing thanks to my athletic scholarship. And then I went on to get a master's in sports medicine, which was in my first early stages, kind of my first business. Wow. But that was my path. That doesn't mean that is appropriate for every single person. So it really goes back to what you're saying and really knowing yourself and getting comfortable with being still, listening to that voice and say, wow, I'm really good at this. I had a lot of folks that say, this is a funny story. Okay, when I was in undergraduate school, I thought it'd be really cool on my resume if I had business and marketing and another major in computer science. Well, I had to keep dropping my computer science classes because I was almost failing them. And I hired a tutor and I said, well, just can't get this. And this was back when Fortran and assembler language, I mean, I'm really dating myself. I'm in my, you know, I'm 63. So it's like, I'm really like dating myself.
Wow.
So what's so funny is he goes, okay, look, Selena, I'm going to tell it to you straight. This is my tutor. He says, you got the right answer, but if you were in the real world, you would have cost the company thousands of dollars because your loops are so inefficient. He goes, you're so good at relationship building and marketing. Why don't you just lean into that? Yep. And I thought that was the best advice I ever got, because people would say, work on your weaknesses. And I say, no, surround yourself with people who can help you and then lean into what you really love and want to do, because then it's not work. It's like, oh, this is fun. I get up just to go up and work every day. Okay.
Good. I don't work a day in my life. I don't work a day in my life. I'm working my passion. Another pivotal moment in my journey was when I was on my way to university. And I wasn't, my relationship with my father was strained, as most are when you're heading to college. And we were stuck in a car together for about 3 hours. And I said, Dad, because the question that was burning in me was, does the career that you choose affect who you become as an adult? Mm. That was the kind of 17-year-old I was on my way to university, mm-hmm. thinking, you know, I've got the whole spectrum of opportunity in front of me. Which door do I choose?
That's it.
And I asked my dad, Dad, do you like what you do? And he said, I loathe it.
Wow.
And that moment explained a lot to me about my father.
Sure.
Because he was very bitter, he was very angry. He was charming and funny too. But
yeah, right.
But there was the sort of underbelly in him, a very secretive part of himself, but also kind of a tyrannical part of him.
Yeah.
And with his family and with the people who worked under him. And I had seen it my whole life. And I wondered why on earth would you be that way with the people that are looking to you for guidance and leadership? And I said, wow, why do you do it if you hate it so much? He said, well, son, that's the price you pay when you want your parents to be proud of you, when you want to make your way and make your money in the world, and you want to raise your family well and travel and, you know. And it was very clear to me that he had sold his soul in a way. And I said, well, what was your dream? What was your passion when you were my age or younger? And he was only about 44 when we had this conversation.
Mm.
He seems in my memory much older,
mm-hmm.
But he was only about 44 and he had forgotten. And we drove along in silence for about 20 minutes or so. And then big tears started streaming down his cheeks.
Mm.
Tears of regret.
Right.
And I said, did I say something wrong? I'm so sorry if I, you know. And he said, no. I said, well, what is it? Why are you crying? I'd never seen him cry in my life. And he said, well, I just remembered. I wanted to be a photojournalist for National Geographic. And in my mind, I thought, damn, you could have done that. And
yes.
Your parents would have been so proud of you, and you would have traveled the world and had money, raised all the things that he envisioned himself as a success he could have achieved had he followed that path.
Right? Had he known himself. But a lot of that is society norms, right? Like, I do not have children. I chose not to have children because I didn't know myself well enough to not repeat the mistakes I had witnessed.
Yeah.
So I knew and I had seen everybody in my family was divorced and had, you know, we saw that path and I said, I do not want that for myself, nor do I want it for a child I would bring into this world. So I opted to not do that. Yeah. And through the company is how I mentor women and the people even on our team, which they're amazing. It's similar to my path. Many of them came from impoverished backgrounds. They've overcome immigration, government assistance, and even homelessness. And so when we represent organizations that are trying to reach these people in the community, I'm like, well, we're them. We know them. You know, we are And that's why we're really good at what we do, because we have, we understand the motivators and the barriers and what messaging and where these folks are, so that we can reach them and say, there is a different path for you, and we can help you get from point A to point B. And sometimes I think the other thing society puts on us, which I don't really like growing up in the South, that's a great example. When I went to that small school, I would say 85% of the women in that school that were graduating with me were either getting married, getting ready to have babies. And, you know, it was very much an expected role, which is quite frankly why I left, because I didn't have those aspirations. I had just come from an alcoholic, crazy family, you know, and I was like, stay here and repeat that. And they said, well, you know, when are you getting married? That was like a typical question every day I would get in the South. And I would say, I'm going to start a company. I'm going to college. I'm going to start a company. And that is going to be my child. And people thought I was crazy. You know, finally, I had to move out of North Carolina because it was so in that. And I wasn't getting supported as a woman that wanted to go to college, have a company and all of that. And so remember in 1985, Hurricane Diana was coming to the coast. We got hurricanes every year because I was on the coast. Carolina, right? You know what? Right. I'm sick of this. I went out the day before the hurricane hit. I had $50 in my pocket, a credit card. I bought a new car and I said, I'm gone. And I left over the drawbridge of my little town. I was like, bye bye. And I drove to California. And I thought, I could not get far away from my hometown, because I wanted to be just accepted for who I was in my own dreams. And I couldn't find it there. So I had to leave. Now, it was a very lonely time. I ended up in San Francisco, and that was a trip. I will tell you, Henry, it was one of my loneliest times for many reasons. You know, here I am coming from the South, and then I'm in San Francisco all of a sudden. And I remember getting a temp job and getting on their subway system, BART. Well, and I'm Southern polite, right? So I'm making eye contact with everybody and go, good morning, good morning. Can you imagine me getting on? I was like, good morning, how are you doing? And all these newspapers just kind of started coming up over their faces. I sit next to this lady and I pushed the newspaper down. I said, hey, how are you doing? Today's my first day in California. And she says, yeah, no, you know, kidding. But she did had some curse words in there. But it was a really tough time, you know, trying to navigate that big city. And it was very lonely. But what that taught me is you can't run from your pain. You can physically move yourself out of that environment, but you've got to continue to do work on yourself and slay your demons, right? And so I learned how to slay my demons through other means when I got to California. But I thought, oh, this will be it. I'll just move. And I think so many times people think big milestones will change them, like a move, a job, a marriage, having a baby. None of that changes who you are. It's just in a different environment. At the end of the day, you still have to sit with who you are and figure out, okay, who am I and what am I good at and how am I going to make it in this world through that?
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé blasé means to tell your story.
You look to ancient Greek history and you hear about the Oracle of Delphi, right? And into the arch over the mouth of the cave at the Oracle, where the words, know thyself. This is an ancient wisdom that in two words gives you a very powerful tool. One of the things that I've been doing over the past 5 years, about since I've been to Europe, has been exploring my genealogy and my DNA so that I can understand whose essence I am carrying in my being, right? There's a whole science called epigenetics that is showing that we do carry ancestral memory in our very DNA in our genetic makeup. Do you know much about your genealogy? Because what you keep talking about, I'm seeing a pioneer woman coming across the sea. I'm seeing a pirate queen. I'm seeing, you know, all of these incredible pioneering spirits of women throughout your ancestry that have given you some of those capacities inherently that you just can't learn just by life experience. You got to come with some of that with you.
Well, that's really interesting, Henry. Thank you for saying that. I, you know, my father was adopted, and I always wanted to kind of get into his DNA and, you know, kind of where he's like, no, I don't want to do that. Who knows? You know, maybe my DNA is some weird criminal or something. So he never wanted to go there. I've never sort of gone down that path, but I do tap in. I think the power of the feminine is really powerful. And I mean, across the board, you know, having that balance of male and female energy within all of us, there are traits. And that's where I think, you know, this whole thing about the glass ceiling, I always tell women, look, if you don't like the glass ceiling where you're at, you need to get another house, right? Move to another house, right? Or build your own house, that kind of thing.
Right.
And I just attribute it to a lot of mentorship. I don't really know about my DNA, but a lot of mentorship. Now, what's interesting, my mother, she early on in the South, she was from Brooklyn, New York, and she was a jazz singer. She liked to sing jazz in the clubs, right? And her first husband, they moved to North Carolina. They ended up getting divorced where she married my father. So that's how I came about. So I had this mixture of this, you know, kind of Brooklyn, New Yorker, Southern thing, which is kind of weird.
It's a really interesting combination.
It's a totally interesting. I always say I'm a polite type A, right? Yeah. But my mom, I remember early on, she ran for the Board of Education. Now think about this. This was like, I don't know, in the 60s, like 65, 68.
Yeah.
So she had that in her for, I think she started drinking for the wrong reasons and all of that. And that really, really did a number on her, but she had that potential in her. So when I think about my past and the good and the bad and all of that, I really embrace the traits that she had that were in that manner. There were many other volatile traits that obviously, but I like to keep that good in my heart and then just leave the rest, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Half of my family is from New York. And
oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah, my father's family. My mom's family are Philadelphia, which is a totally different vibe. And of course, her family was military as well. So they traveled around the world. My father's father was a union leader for the Bakers Union in New York. And my grandmother, his mother, was a working woman in her youth. She was the buyer of ladies' intimate apparel at Bloomingdale's in New York City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, yes. So again, there's that sort of... And what I know about my grandmother, who is, as I say, one of my pivotal, my father's mother, actually my mother's mother too in her way. But I talk a lot about my father's mother because she gave me so much permission to just be who I am. And with the wisdom of what she knew of her ancestry, right? And she was first generation. Her parents came from Romania to New York at the turn of the century. She came across alone at 16 years old.
Wow.
I mean, come on, right? Name one 16-year-old who's going to do that today.
We have the wherewithal to just like, okay, I'm going in and, you know, yeah, that's amazing.
There's got to be something in her bloodline,
right,
her DNA that she carried that gave her the gumption to do that. And she told me, she taught me a very valuable lesson among many, but one was that labels are for food cans. They're not for human beings. That when you label yourself as this, that, or the other, pick one, you're opening up to everyone else's interpretation of what it means to be you.
Yes.
Only you know you. So let your name be label enough. Let them get to know your good name. People should smile when they hear your name. And that's Absolutely. What I hear you talking about, that you may not have had, you may not have birthed children into this right. world, but you have a lot of children in this world.
Yes.
A lot of people that look up to you as a mother figure and as an example for how to be in the world. And that's exactly what I was talking about in terms of being in the parenting generation and holding yourself in the way that is parental to all young eyes that are upon you.
Wow. Thank you so much for saying that, because I really feel like, you know, what is your mission in life, right? And even though I have this amazing company and the work that we do every day, it really is about, like, sometimes I'll be in a meeting, Henry, with a, you know, a group of people, and I'll see a woman shut down and not have a voice. And she's my customer, you know, but we're in a group setting, and I'll call her after that call and say, hey, you know, Sarah, I said, if this makes you uncomfortable, let me know. But just woman to woman, I want to have this chat. And I said, I noticed in this part of the meeting, I felt like you really shut down, and because this was going on, and all of a sudden I didn't hear your voice, and you have so many great ideas. So we'll open up that conversation with that woman, and she'll talk, and she'll say, well, yeah, I really felt, I said, well, what's the fear, you know, and we just sort of have this conversation around it. Mm. Well, and, you know, and so it's that little piece like that, I feel, is the bigger mission, is like to really help women have that voice, do business in a different way. You do not have to do it like a man. And don't get me wrong, men, I have some of the best mentors that are men, you know, I love men. Yeah. And yeah. I think women don't understand the power they bring to the table, that empathy, you know, creating a culture. I just wrote an article around the future of work. And one of the questions was around this whole thing around, you know, the pandemic and, you know, workplace and creating a culture. And I said, if anything, it's a wake up for employers to create that culture where there is diversity of thought. And the product is always better. Whatever strategy or everything you're coming up, if you have more diverse thought, it is going to be a better strategy, a better service, a better, you fill in the blank, right?
Right.
But it's really waking people up around this culture, the elements of culture. And I just think personally, you know, having my own company, I try to create that culture, obviously, with everybody that we have in the company. And then we're customers too, you know, it's like, right. I just watch, just say, that's interesting. And so that, I thank you for saying that, that really has made my day. So thank you.
Oh, well, you know, I mean it from my heart. And I think that when we start to wake up to the power that we have as women, as men, who both yep. carry the divine masculine, divine feminine,
absolutely.
Within us, right. There yes. are, it's nuanced. It's very nuanced.
It is. Yes.
And it behooves us to get to know the person, to get to know their yes. name on their terms, so that we can find the common ground where it lies. I think that that's something that I see missing a lot in the world. And I believe that that is rooted in ignorance. We fear what we do not know.
Absolutely.
Fear is rooted yes. in ignorance, and fear begets more ignorance and it divisions that we're seeing all over the world, not just in the States, but everywhere. Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups, virtual or in-person book club meetings. For further information, go to psychologyprofessorandminister.com. Let's talk a little bit about fear.
Mm.
That's such a powerful force that's taken hold. You see a lot of young people who are riddled with anxiety right now, not knowing yes. what the future is going to be, not knowing the power that they have to create the world that they imagine and envision. They don't even know where to begin. Where do you come from in terms of your understanding of the role, if there is one, of fear and/or the role of fearlessness? I'm fearless myself, and I'll tell you a story about that after you share.
Sure. Well, it's such a great topic because when you think about fear, it's something that we really bring on ourselves, right? I think a pivotal point for me was when I transferred away from college. So I was living in my hometown and I was really craving, I wanted to go to a better business school. And I moved in a couple of days before everyone, and we had a co-ed dorm. I was exhausted and I went to take a shower and nobody was in the dorm. I think the guys were downstairs or whatever. And I had this feeling like somebody was in that facility with me. But I was exhausted and I kind of shook it off, you know, as that. And I looked up and there was a guy peering over the shower stall and he came after me. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going, you know, how am I going to get out of this? And I don't know if it was my sports training, you know, when you're down by 20 points and you never give up, but I had a thought momentarily, even though I was terrified, it's like, fight, do not let him win. And so I did. I got out. I was throwing shampoo in his face and everything, and I was able to get out of that and not be raped. However, the repercussions behind that, I would be on campus and a leaf would roll behind me, and I had post-traumatic stress disorder and didn't even know it. Back then, you don't know, you just keep going. So when I moved home, I thought, I just was exhausted. And I thought, you know, I can't. Like the fear was there every day. The fear of that was going to happen again. The fear of doing anything. Like that was the most fearful I've ever been in my life. And finally, I said, you know what? I can't do this anymore. And I read about this class called Awakening the Warrior Within. And it's taught by this little 5'2, it's now a book on Amazon. 5'2, she's a black belt, and you do not want to be running in a black alley with her. She
I
is
will
like,
put a link to that book, by the way, in the description because
okay, good.
I love
It's
sharing.
amazing. Yeah, Dawn Callen is her name. She changed my life completely. And it's a course, you have to sign a waiver and everything because what they do is they teach you dirty street fighting. Like if you were to be attacked, what would you do? And it's not kung fu or anything, it's just dirty street fighting. They break you down emotionally, physically, mentally for 3 days. I mean, you are so sore. I actually broke a rib in the final training because the final training that you go through is with a 6'2 fully padded black belt, and they're all in a group with your women, right? Your women and friends, and they say, okay, you're going to have to take him out learning your, and he's fully padded, and you think, how am I going to do this? Because you're sore, you can't, but we're screaming, you know, women aren't taught to scream and have a voice, right? It's all this stuff. They just break down everything. So all the stuff with the potential rape now is coming, you know, the attack is coming up with me and everything. In the first 3 rounds, he pinned me. He said, I got you, you're raped. Pinned me, you know, I was like, oh my God. So we're in a circle and he said, I tell you what, if you let me have one of your girls here, one of your women friends, I'll let you get out of the fourth round. And I started crying. I'm like, no, I'm gonna do the fourth round, you know, I'm gonna do it. And I guess there's a small percentage of rapes that are called kamikaze, where the guy comes out of nowhere and you don't even know. That's what he put on me. He turned away, then he came back, and all the training kicked in. You know, the athletic moments where everything slows down and everything. And I got it. I got all the training. I took him out. They had to pull me off of him because I was just like so enraged. And I will tell you, from that moment on, the fear left me. Not because I felt, I'm gonna cry just talking about this because it's so emotional. It's not that I learned the dirty street fighting. It was, I released the fear, right? So what is that path for people to release fear? Maybe it's not that class, but that's how I found it in mine. And it opened up the entrepreneur that I was, right? That's when I started my first company. I wrote a book. I mean, it was like, oh, this stuff just came out. So I don't know how people release fear. I think it's a very personal journey on how you do it. Maybe some people find it through church or meditation or guidance or whatever. That was the way I dealt with it. And probably because I was an athlete and it was so physical that that was my path of doing it.
I think it also comes back. Thank you for sharing that. Very powerful story. And as we know now, which we it's still fairly new information about rape culture in the world. And also rape is not about sex or sexuality.
No.
It's about power. And people who are feeling a lack of power need to overpower someone else to have a semblance for a moment.
It.
And it's such a rush that it keeps self-perpetuating. For me, I was never a fearful child, even though I was a violent home, both physically and emotionally violent. I was never afraid of the dark. I was never afraid of punishment. I was never afraid of bugs or snakes or any of that. I wasn't that kid. But at 8 years old, my teacher, this was at the International School in Vienna, Austria. Her name was Mrs. Fend, which I think is great. It's like fend for yourself.
Exactly.
She gave us an assignment, a homework assignment. And we had to write a short paragraph. And the topic was, what is your greatest fear? And I remember like it was yesterday. This is 50 years ago. Sitting at my desk with an empty sheet of paper in front of me, thinking to myself, why would anyone ask a child to focus on what they're afraid of? Don't we want to give them courage? Don't we want to build them up? And I mean, that's the kind of 8 year old I was. And the only thing that I could think of to write this short paragraph on was outliving my children. That was my only fear. And that happened 14 years ago. I was a single father. He was my only child. And at 11 years old, he was diagnosed with brain cancer. And he passed at 13. And when your entire identity is wrapped up in parenting, and unlike you and many other people, my impulse was not to avoid the mistakes that my parents made by not having children. Mine was to be the parent to a child that I didn't get to have. And I always knew I would be a papa. And Cameron, and I'm a cancer survivor myself. So I'm very clear now that I had cancer before he was even born so that I could walk with him on his journey and eliminate his fear. Just by my having had it and survived it. And he didn't have a moment of fear, anxiety, depression, rage. He knew at every step where he was, what was happening. And it was the most beautiful journey. Crappy outcome, I won't lie. I mean, it was not easy. And it's like watching your child be pushed backwards repeatedly into a toxic well, and they've got to climb out of it. You can be there with a warm, fluffy towel to wrap them up in it and be there for them on the other side of the chemo, radiation, or whatever they're going through. And that feeling of helplessness was the worst for me. Not even losing him was worse than the feeling of helplessness for me. But what became very clear to me after his passing was that the only fear that I could ever name is now resolved.
Wow.
I got through that. Now,
yes.
I was the gift in that trauma. And I am diagnosed with PTSD, so I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, listeners, June happens to be International PTSD Awareness Month. So
yes.
I'm so glad we're talking about this.
Exactly.
That I managed, somehow the universe conspired for me to have an awareness in my foundation years that I was going to be meeting something that I needed to overcome in this life. And
that's
I did. And the way that I channel my grief now is into service through the foundation that I started with Cameron while he was here. It's now called the Lost Travelers Club, which actually this podcast is a source to support. And I see for myself no value whatsoever in fear. When we can identify the worst moment of our lives, no matter how old we are, if we can identify the worst, very worst moment in our entire lives and measure everything else against it, everything else kind of feels small potatoes.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Childcare is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
Wow, that is such an amazing story. Thank you so much for sharing that. I see why you have Henry Dash Cameron Allen now. I was like, okay, I wonder where Cameron came from. And now,
you know why I hyphenated? I'll tell you. It's a quick story. He after he passed, it became aware to me, it being very clear in trying to find my identity again.
Yes.
That there's no word like widow or orphan for a parent who's outlived a child. Nothing in any language, in any culture around the world that I could find. And I took a road trip to the Grand Canyon. And I needed to feel small after 2 years of being a superhero. I needed to get my scale back, you know?
Yes.
And there are these long stretches of desert before you ever get to the canyon. 70 miles, no gas. You got to fill up before you head in. And it was about 3 a.m. and I saw this bright light on the horizon. I thought it was a star, but it turned out to be this little enclave of 3 buildings with a 100-foot-tall lamppost. And in the beam was a small motel, I think it was a Zuni tribe trading post, and a post office. Nothing for miles around, no civilization, but it had its own zip code. And I looked up at the post office and it was Cameron, Arizona. Hello.
Oh, wow.
Total Twilight Zone moment. And so I slept a few hours in the motel, got up, and there was an elderly woman sitting on her blanket selling jewelry. I bought a ring from her.
Nice.
And I asked if I could sit with her for a moment and ask her a pretty profound question. And she invited me to sit down. And she was your classic silver-haired, wrinkled, slit-eyed, weathered sage. And I said, you know, I've been looking over the past weeks since I lost my son for something to identify with, because anybody who asks me, oh, do you have children? I've got to tell the story over and over and over, and it's exhausting. And I don't have to say, well, I'm a blank, be like a widow or an orphan, because that tells the story. There's nothing like that for parents of child loss.
Right.
And I said, is there anything in your language or culture that holds that? And she said, well, maybe there's no word for it because it's too profound a loss for a mere word to describe. Mm-hmm. She said, in my culture, your name would change because your name, getting back to the wisdom of the grandmother, name, the importance of your name. Your name is the expression of your identity in the world.
And that's when exactly your identity
is so shaken, right?
Yes.
Am I a parent if I'm not parenting? I might call you Henry whose son is gone. That would become your name. And I would introduce you as Henry whose son is gone. People would talk about you when you're not in the room under that name, even when they just think about you. They think of that new identity so that they're holding you in your loss.
And in your space.
In your space. And I thought that's a beautiful, beautiful, gentle and thoughtful way to hold parents of child loss, but it doesn't quite fit into the global lexicon. I don't want to go calling myself Henry whose son is gone. So It came to me in a dream to hyphenate his name with mine for two reasons. One is that one, when you've lost a child, when one has lost a child, nobody speaks their name anymore.
Yes.
You never hear anyone say, oh, I thought of Cameron today. Or how are you doing around the whole Cameron, you know, loss thing? You don't hear their name in the world anymore. And I wanted to hear his name, damn it. So part exactly. of it to preserve that. And it was also to link the two of us, a bond, eternal bond between us, the way people hyphenate their last names sometimes when they get married, right?
It's absolutely, yeah.
And it's also a mathematical equation. It's Henry minus Cameron, which is Henry, the son is gone. So for me, in my journey, it may not tell everybody the story. I love telling the story. So it does serve that purpose for me. And I don't know that it would work for everyone, but that's why it's Henry Cameron. And people, some people call me Henry Cameron around the world. Some people just call me Henry, and some people call me Cameron, and I love it.
Well, I will definitely call you Henry Cameron after hearing that story, Cameron is a beautiful spirit. I can feel him already. And, you know, your story, just a quick story. I studied Native American shamanism, and that became my spiritual path. Name from the Cherokee tribe that I studied their culture with is Love Warrior. And so that's the name that they gave me. And at the time, my heart was broken in a million pieces. And I said, I don't feel love. And they said, no, and so that was became my path of doing that. But I do want to share one last thing about fear. You know, all these stories we've been sharing today, if we look back and we look at those experiences, as traumatic as they may have been, we say, wow, I see why that happened now, right? And so for me, as I've gotten older and older, I don't look at anything that happens as good or bad. I don't have a judgment on it because it's happening for a reason. And I trust now through my life journey that whatever is given to me or anything that is meant for me is not going to pass me by. If it's meant for me, it's going to land in my lap, which is why to trust your gut and say, oh, we didn't get that contract. You know, that's okay because another one is coming forward. Like if you're in business or, I see why that, but it's always looking back. If we can reflect back and then get to this point of being in gratitude. So fear is also gone in my life. I don't fear anything. I'm just pure gratitude that, wow, I get to run this company. I get to have this journey. And I don't know what's going to happen. You don't have to have everything planned out, but if you have your intention set, that fear just goes away and you realize that whatever's going to happen to you, you can handle it. And it's going to mold you until your next step, whatever that may be.
And your integrity is intact and your self-knowledge is intact. Yes. And you have all of the biographies of the people who led to you, generations of love that led to your being born into the world. And your entire biography, the biographies of your parents, your grandparents, your great-grandparents, all the way back to the common ancestor that we all have, and mine, have led to this conversation. If it was meant to be otherwise, it would be otherwise. Cameron used to say that about dying. He said, Papa, everyone's going to die. And nobody knows when, nobody knows how. But when it's your time, it's your time. And when it's your way, it's your way. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. Right? So live, live while you're here. And now Cameron is my ancestor. My child is my ancestor. Wow. And I've been sitting with that. I just got a book. I'm going to put a link to this one too. It's called Ancestral Medicine.
Oh, that's great.
Rituals for Personal and Family Healing by Daniel Orr, PhD. Absolutely groundbreaking work in finding many indigenous cultures around the world, the way that we handle the concept of death. I don't believe in death anymore. I think it's an illusion.
Yes. Yes.
Your generous sponsorship and individual support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club,
a charitable project under the fiscal sponsorship of United Charitable, a nonprofit 501c3 organization. The Lost Travelers Club focuses primarily on the needs of parents who have outlived their beloved children. We recently launched our new Brain Candy Project wing, providing art supplies to children still struggling with critical or terminal health-related conditions. We hope to raise enough funds to launch Brain Candy, an arts and literature magazine created by and for these young people. Find out more at www.braincandy.online. Thank you.
And we could spend three more hours talking about that. boy, this hour has been chock full of deliciousness. And I thank you for being so open. And it's been a really great, great time meeting you and sharing our journeys and our stories. One thing that I've taken to doing is asking of my co-hosts in every episode to hear a question that was left by the previous co-host that was expressed just for you. And the question that I want to ask you to end this episode is, what's the vision that you have for the world that you're creating?
I know that one because I think about it every day. And when I start the morning, I put this out into the world. So as we work with all these organizations and entrepreneurs, my vision is that everyone will find who they are through what they do. And that there can, you know, they're very authentic with those steps in the world. So there are many paths to get there, right? And sure. Many resources to do that. And people don't have to be alone to find that, you know, their place in the world. And I just think about, like, I'll sit here at my desk and think, wow, wouldn't that be an amazing place if, like, everybody got up and they couldn't wait to get to work. They couldn't wait to contribute. They couldn't wait to share their gifts, who they are. So that's the vision. That's the vision right there. And I put it out in the world every day, you know, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I'm happy to expand that to 41 countries around the world, because I think that that is a very, very important question for our time. We didn't even get to go into technology and AI and the future. That article that you mentioned that you wrote about.
Yes.
Is that available on the somewhere?
I'll send you a link to it. It's published through the Authority Magazine online. Great. And we get into things, you know, a lot of some of the AI and some of the trends and that kind of thing. But great. I just feel like, you know, we showed up today, Henry Cameron, and we had the conversation that was meant to be. So I want to come to your little village in Spain and visit you.
Listen, I've got a 4-bedroom house and a lovely guest room waiting whenever you come out here.
I love it. I invited myself to your place. I love it.
Well, if you hadn't, I would have invited you in eventually anyway. I have a feeling we're going to stay in touch, and I hope that we will be able to come back and do a part two sometime, because there's a lot more to talk about. What question do you have for my next co-host?
Oh, that is so good. I would dive into, we want to hear more about the woman in Arizona and the power of tapping into other cultures and how they can help you remove fear and find your own spiritual path and the path of least resistance. That I would have lots of questions around that, the path of least resistance, because that's where I think you find your happy place.
So the question is for the next co-host.
Yes.
What is your path of least resistance?
Yes. You put it eloquently. Yes.
Toward your future, toward the world's future.
Yes. All of the above.
All of the above.
I think it starts with yourself, because then once you get out of survival and your own pain, you can start looking outward to, okay, well, what can you contribute to the world? Like what is your little part that you play? And right. Resistance, you know, it plays a big role in that. So that would be my question. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, Selena Shantz, it's been a joy, and I'm excited to stay in touch with you and see what we can do in the world together. I'm a collaborator, and
Oh,
you're,
me
I would
too.
love to find a really cool project to do. So thank
We
you.
will find it. We will find it. Thank you so much for having me and for opening yourself up and sharing your story and for your leadership and what you're doing in the world as well. I just really appreciate you in the conversation we've had today. So thank you so much.
Thank you, and we'll talk again soon.
Okay, take care.
You've been listening to season 4 of the Lost Traveler podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.